welcome to the Grand Cast. Today is Saturday, August the 26th, 2017 AD.
What does AD mean? Do you know off the top?
Anno Domini. After
right.
Death.
Okay.
Apple dumpling.
Apple dumpling. That is an untapped market.
It's been tapped.
Oh. Shows my apple dumpling knowledge.
Apple dumpling gang. You familiar with them?
I'm not.
Oh.
Should I be? Let's skip the questions and talk about apple dumplings.
That's a whole nother podcast.
Oh,
right
boy.
There.
Okay.
This is season 3, episode 8. My copy said 7. I'm going to have to talk to my copy editor about being more detail-oriented. It's hard to find good help these days. I like to start out each episode by going over the mission statement and the goals for the show. The mission statement being that the purpose of the Grand Cast is to explore the comedy scene in Grand Rapids, Michigan as it exists in 2017 through a series of conversations. Then there's two goals. First goal is to post one new episode weekly, which I have been royally fucking up this month. I think I put 3 episodes out in the span of 3 days. So on average, it's not bad, but
I was going to say, I can't believe you're at 8 already for the season.
Yeah, there's 6 out, but it went 1, 2, 3, 7, 4, 5.
Okay.
There was scheduling around The Nightman Cometh, and which was a live production, so yeah. I wanted to get some of the people from that show on, get their episodes out before. And then it's been really nice out weather-wise, so I've been
living
it up
life.
And yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for the schedule interruptions, Josh and Matt and everyone.
Yeah, I feel like I've been a hurdle for that as well. But hey, here I am.
let's not discuss your scheduling. The second goal is to make at least one person's day better through the creation of quality content.
How do you measure that?
Someone tells me.
Oh, I guess that's a pretty straightforward way.
Yeah. Not someone that's in charge of measuring things, but someone will be like, oh, I listened to that episode and it was good. And I'll be like, oh, thanks. And then I check it off on my mental goal list for
right.
The day.
No, that's important.
I think so. The interview portion of the show, if you're ready to...
Yeah, do people know who I am yet?
No. My guest to this... Mid-afternoon, since it is 1:50 p.m. Eastern Standard Time? Daylight Time?
No, we're EST.
Daylight is winter?
Oh, right. It's fall, back, spring, forward, so we're currently, like, ahead by an hour. Or we're at normal time.
I don't know. We're in Eastern Time, whatever it is in August. And my guest is Mr. Brett Cooper.
Hello.
Are you familiar with the meaning of the word Cooper?
Yeah, as a barrel maker?
No, as a car model.
Oh, like the Mini Cooper.
Yes.
Right. Was there a regular sized one?
That's a question for the ages.
Well, I've got some research to do after this. I'm gonna write that down.
Did you say barrel maker?
Yeah. Are you not familiar with that term? I don't mean to. Sorry if that sounded like condescending. Cooper is like an English term. It's the person you would go to when you need your barrels made. So you have that. And then my first name, I looked it up once back in the AOL days. There was a thing when you log in and it's just like find the meaning of your name. And it was Queen of Britannia, I believe. So just like the Queen of Barrel Making, I think is...
That's you?
Well, I wouldn't say that is me. I would say that is my parents' namesake for me.
Hmm.
Yeah. I was almost named Dujurian, but my dad got the say in that one. So here I am. Yeah, I do go by Biko primarily now, only because that is kind of the name that I identify with more. I never really felt like a Brett, and so it's just something that I've wanted to tell people, and it's kind of hard to make a transition like that because the people that know you are just like, that's weird that you want us to call you something else. But getting involved with the comedy scene last year, I met a lot of new people, so I did feel like I was in a place where I could do that. So that's why I prefer it.
B-I-I-K-O?
Correct.
Biko.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if someone who builds chicken coops is also a cooper.
That one I've heard nothing about, so I can't really speak to that one.
Hmm.
That might be like a colloquial term. Or like, you know, like, what up, coops? We're going to build some coops today.
I wonder if it was ever a co-oper, but it got dehyphenated.
You think it would come from copper first? I mean, that's been around for quite some time.
Like a police officer?
No, I mean like the elements, copper or the alloy.
Oh, miners.
Yes. But I mean, there was the copper age. That was when they started making like tools out of it, and that presented a whole new era. But I think they were doing that before they were making barrels.
I remember that from Age of Empires.
There you go.
Yep.
Video games have done wonders for the knowledge of history among the population. Yeah.
Civilization by itself probably taught more.
Yeah, Gandhi's people. A dick. Like, no one knew that.
Yeah, the things you learn. But he had... good motives?
Sure. In real life, he did. Do you know why in the games he was such a jack-off? Like, are you not aware of this? Okay, so no. Gandhi in the games is, like, very prone to war and is at complete ends with who he actually is or was as a person. And it's because they set his aggression level so low that there was a bug that it actually rolled over and became the most aggressive person he could be. And so the developers thought it was funny. So instead of patching it, they're just like, that's just the way it is.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. What is your favorite color?
What is my favorite color? I'm partial to sky blue. I do like lighter tones. As far as like my wardrobe, I'd say like black and white and the gradients therein are primarily what I stick to. Muted colors. I also do like lime green. That's more like just an aesthetic preference. Haven't really been partial to like bright yellow. Yeah, I don't like things to be like neon or like overly bright, just like kind of like pastel almost.
Hmm.
What's your favorite color, Chris?
That's a tough one. There's like Kelly Green was a long time favorite, and then now maybe like a charcoal or a gunmetal is really nice.
Nice.
Probably some shade of purple, but I'm not sure which one yet.
I thought you were going to go straight to purple.
Probably lavender, but there's some darker purples, like a royal purple that's really nice too.
Okay. You do seem like a man with rich tastes.
I like combinations of colors probably more than any individual color. So like a chocolatey brown with a lighter blue.
Okay.
Or like a Kelly green and a like a rich purple.
You have, I mean, do you ask your interviewees favorite color in just about every interview?
Every
interview.
The first question.
Okay.
Just kind of ease into things.
So is it more just like a testing answer, or would you say color is super important to you? Or do you think it says something?
It's a significant component in a psychological profile.
Okay. Can you tell me anything about it, or is that just for the listener to decide?
I actually have no clue.
Okay.
It might come in handy later, though.
I'm gonna write that down, too.
I definitely think the way that people feel attracted to certain things kind of reflects certain personality aspects.
Okay.
More than a correlation. Or it's strongly correlated in a meaningful way. Maybe. I'm not sure yet. I'm still gathering data.
So you're going to figure it out.
Okay. I'm testing my hypotheses.
I look very forward to your paper on this. I think it's going to be groundbreaking, quite honestly.
Yeah, it'll end up being like a 8-question Facebook quiz that people are just like, yeah.
That's why it's digestible. I mean, that's how to reach the biggest audience.
Yeah, we'll see. If you had to be transformed into an animal, which type of animal would you choose to be?
Red panda. That one's kind of just like an easy one for me. I used to identify strongly with butterflies as like a spirit animal. And then I went to the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago. About a year.
The band has their own zoo.
You are the third person to make that joke since I've met pandas. There is a Lincoln Park Zoo named after the area, Lincoln Park, which I believe the band is named after. But there are multiple Lincoln Parks in America, so I want to believe that it could have been any of them.
Probably President Lincoln, because he was from
Illinois. Springfield?
Which is also where Chicago is.
Yeah. So yeah, I could see that. But yeah, no, I'd pick Red Panda just because I went to that zoo and I saw them for the first time and I was just like, something about them just spoke to me. They were super. It's like a cross between for you out there unfamiliar with red pandas. They're like a cross between a raccoon and a fox. There's not much bear in there, and I just thought they were super cute. And I have a red panda onesie now. I wear that sometimes. Just kind of more, not because I want to be a red panda, but just because it makes me feel warm when I'm in it. I think because it's a onesie.
I think they just got a red panda or multiple red pandas at the John Ball Zoo.
Just the one. I'm very excited to see that exhibit. I had plans to do that a few days ago, but they fell through. Just because it was the same day as the eclipse, and so I was trying to get some other things going on that day. Yeah. But yeah, I guess I would pick that just because it seems like something I would enjoy.
Were you performing a sacrifice, or like was it a solar alignment kind of time window deal?
I mean, I went to Hopcat and I put on 2 pairs of sunglasses and sat on their patio and had lunch with my girlfriend, and we just kind of looked at the sun and tried not to make our eyes bleed.
Looked at the sun through sunglasses?
Yes.
Ooh.
No, but I had just like, and I was doing some like eye coverage too. I don't think my eyesight suffered because of it. But with time, we'll see.
Good luck with that.
Thank you.
What is your earliest memory of experiencing comedy?
Of experiencing comedy. Oh boy. Just like remembering laughing, or is that open-ended?
It's up to you to interpret the question.
Okay. I feel like I really kind of just, and I still do this, but it was more instinctual when I was when I was very young, I kind of just did things to get reactions out of people, just because I thought that was fun. And I guess there's no specific memory, but it was just like, I'm going to do something that I know is silly for the purpose of making my parents laugh. And that made me feel good. So just like a real base level that, there's not really one experience that sticks out as like, this is something I want to do, is make people laugh. It's just more like I like the way that it made me feel. And so I liked doing it. Just kind of being ridiculous.
How did you first get involved in performing comedy?
So I did some theater in high school. Oh, before that, I also did Odyssey of the Mind, which is like, are you familiar with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yeah, I actually went to World when I did it for the first time in third or fourth grade. And we did the structural one and just kind of like squeaked by at state. We got second, which meant we were eligible for that. And so that was a really cool thing to be a part of. And I just kind of learned to like performing and putting together a script and doing all that. And then in high school, I guess it was a bit more serious. And then I tried it in college, and that was a horrible experience. And where I met Sean Francis, I don't know if he remembers that, but I've brought it up with him a couple times. I was an extra in A Midsummer Night, which he had a larger role in. And I actually slept through one of my scenes and no one noticed. Like, that's how unimportant I was in that. And I didn't want to just like be fighting my way up from the bottom of the barrel again. So I kind of stopped doing stage performance. And that's really when I started to focus on music. And so that became my performing outlet for a while. And then moving back here, I met Cameron, who y'all might know as Big Time from Fictional Friends. And he and I were like instantly best friends. Like, we were hanging out every day after I met him, and he invited me to watch him do improv and then encouraged me to come up for the jam portion at the end. And he's just like, I think it's something you would enjoy doing. And he was right. And he ended up moving to Chicago like 2 weeks after the first time I did it. But I kept going back, and so that's now how I'm involved with the comedy scene in Grand Rapids. And it's reignited this passion I have for stage work, and I'm thankful for that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you fuck with oats?
Do I fuck with oats? I've heard this question before. And I'm going to have to give a solid no to that. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything against oats per se. It's more just like, I've never been walking down the aisle of a grocery store and thought, you know what would be good right now?
Mm-hmm.
Me is some oats. I should get some oats so I can have those later. I should stock up on oats. I do not fuck with oats.
Oh, yet.
Is that a controversial opinion?
I don't know.
Delve deeper into the oat world.
Yeah, I would recommend it.
Do you fuck with oats?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Seasonally.
Okay.
But
okay, no, that makes sense. You got to get them when they're good.
For me, it's more of like a cold weather thing. Okay. They're pretty hearty and filling.
Yeah, man, I just give me some Fruity Pebbles. I'm good to go.
Oh.
Oh, yes. You seem displeased with that. I'm sorry to let you down, man. I just, you know, I have my preferences. I think we all do.
Yeah. Fruity Pebbles?
Fruity Pebbles!
You're hungry again like 10 minutes later because it's just sugar.
Yeah, but it's delicious.
Yeah.
I'm not much of a breakfast person. I also catch flack for that a lot.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
I usually skip straight to lunch. I get up pretty late. And so
that's fair.
Yeah. I'm not trying to make like a whole meal in the morning. I just kind of want to subsist until I can get a more hearty meal, as you would put it.
I like cereal a lot.
I'll have cereal like once every 3 months.
Hmm.
When it's available. When it's around.
Yeah.
All right, don't get Fruity Pebbles. So I'm an adult, and I get to choose what I put in my body.
I'm saying that as someone with a box of Lucky Charms in the cupboard right there, though. So
when you
with a grain of...
With a grain of oat?
Maybe.
So to speak.
There's also oats in there.
Oh, my God.
Bags of steel cut.
Shout out to Tom Hunt for getting us to talk about oats. I'm assuming that's where this came from.
Yeah, he's my oat guy.
Oh, my God.
You can do oats in the summer, too, as like a part of a parfait. To add a little bit more protein and fiber.
I mean, I like granola. Does that count?
That's like half oats.
Half oats? Usually. Okay, well, then I half fuck with oats. Oh, well, I sit corrected. Okay.
All right. We got there. We got there. I'm not even going to delve into the religious aspect of oat production.
Oh, boy.
That seems inappropriate for today.
Inappropriate?
Oh.
Oh, shit.
Where does the name Biko come from?
It is a stitched together version of my name. If you take the B from Brett and the CO from Cooper and then put those together, you get Biko. And the spelling is purely just because I like the way it looks. In my mind, it rolls off the tongue easier. I know that some people think it's like Biko or it's related to Stephen Biko. But that's, I don't know. It just, I like the way it looks when I write. I like that there's two eyes in it. Oh, I thought you had a cat. I don't know if anybody just heard that, but there was what I now assume is a child laughing, but it did sound like a yowl.
Some kind of squeal.
Yes.
Someone outside. I don't know. I'll go look. You.
Okay. Oh, boy. Not really good at thinking on my feet and feeling dead air.
It's a younger woman with a dog.
Okay. I don't think that was the dog we heard. That definitely sounded human in retrospect, but in the moment.
Yeah. Something exciting must have happened.
It's probably us talking, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yes, and.
How would you describe your emotional state, just like in general? Because you seem like one of the most level people I have ever met.
I was raised Catholic, so there's a lot of repression and suppression. Like, bottle it up and push it down and just keep on carrying on and keep calm. And
is there an outlet for you to let that, like, seethe out? Or is it, or do you think you could just, like, snap one day?
Alcohol. I'm also
sure.
Partly Irish.
Okay.
Like quarter Irish. So that's part of the Catholicism also.
Oh, man.
And the drinking. But it's not bad.
This is the biggest I've seen Chris smile since we've started this interview.
I meditate a lot. Just process things. Mostly just let things go.
That's pretty healthy.
Try to be pretty zen about it.
I'm not going to knock on that.
It's like, you can't change it, so what's the, there's some sort of creed or screed or I don't know the word, like accepting the things you have to and letting go of the things you can't change and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yep.
Something like that. Apostles Creed, maybe?
I think that was a boxer in Rocky movies.
Oh, you're right.
Maybe it's a band. I bet you it's a band.
It should be. If it's not,
look that up on Spotify.
Yeah.
There's
also a healthy dose of nihilism for me.
Sure. And I think that's probably the biggest picture way to look at life.
Just not caring.
Well, I don't know about not caring so much as like the accepting that really truly nothing matters if you zoom out enough, but I think that takes a lot of enjoyment out of life if you just say nothing matters. Like, some things have to matter to you. And so I'd say keep that perspective, because I do think for me, it is helpful to realize that, because it does make me feel like I can do anything. But it's not healthy to have nothing matter is all I'm getting at. Like, you should care about some things. And here you are. You're creating a podcast. You support your friends in a lot of their endeavors. I think that's very admirable. And so there are things that you care about. So I wouldn't say you're entirely nihilistic. I know you didn't say that.
Not entirely, but there's definitely a healthy dose of it. Speaking of supporting my friends in their things, let's talk about Fictional Friends Improv.
Fractional fans. Fictorial fun. There's a bunch of FFs. I don't know why we don't capitalize on that more often.
Fast fingers.
Fast fingers is what they called me in high school. They didn't call me that. I'm sorry.
Did you play trumpet?
Trombone, actually. So I guess that's more like wrist forearm action.
Oh.
Yeah, I've been involved with Fictional Friends since last January. No, maybe even December. So that makes it about 8-9 months. Wow, time flies. I really didn't realize I'd been there.
You're having a baby.
A little bit. Maybe they would describe it as that, but yeah, it's really a great thing to be a part of. I do like their approach to it. I remember my first workshop. I don't know if everyone out there is aware of it, but there's like a meditation portion at the beginning of the Fictional Friends workshop. And my first one, I wasn't aware of that. So I kind of just busted in the door and I was like, "Hey, everybody, what's up?" And Cameron had to like wave me over and be like, "Yo, shut the fuck up." And I was just like, "Oh, God." So got off on that foot, but it's become something that I look forward to. I do work 6 nights a week now. And so having that one day off be Wednesday, it's like, I can just get weird, have fun. But I do feel like I've reached kind of a roadblock with it in that, I know enough now of what's going on that I can be critical of my performance and be conscious of what I'm doing, as opposed to just like being like, "Oh, I'm just going to go have fun." But I think that sets me up to possibly become better at it if I'm more introspective about it. But yeah, no, they're all great people. I love that it's so accepting to anyone. I love the whole premise of just come off the street, be part of a workshop, and we'll put you on stage if that's what you want to do. And so I've seen a lot of people cycle through and like try it once or twice, maybe try it 4 or 5 times, and then some people that have just like stuck around. Two new additions to the cast that I see coming back pretty often. There's Joe and there's Jake, and they performed at Second City in Chicago, and I think their experience is very present on stage. Then you have someone like Tyler or Bobby who clearly know what they're doing. And then I think Fresca and Sal and Zach are like the other three longing standing members. Oh, and Andy Cash, of course.
Andy Cash.
Woo, 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 woo. But it's just odd to think that I've become part of it. I still feel like it's not my thing, but that might be like a personal thing that I'm experiencing. Yeah.
Have you done comedy outside of Fictional Friends?
Every day of my life. Just have a conversation with me. No, not in terms of like I'm going to get on a stage with the intent of trying to make other people laugh. Just like other performances, I guess, like where I've had to improv, like I would be performing a show and let's say that the lead singer slash guitarist's guitar string broke and he has to focus on that, and no one else in the band was comfortable like stepping up to a microphone to fill dead air. And so I had to do that. And I just told a bunch of dumb jokes to kind of keep them with us on the same page. And I guess that was the first time I realized, like, okay, like, I don't mind being looking like a fool, like, just to have that.
That was in a band?
Yes. Animal Holograms, based out of Chicago. I don't want to plug them because the lead singer is a piece of shit. But yeah, so if we could go back and bleep that out. Damn it. Yeah, so I performed with them a couple times, but primarily I do perform as Biko. And anyone listening, I'm looking for band members to start doing that in Grand Rapids.
What style of music?
It is all over the place. I have always struggled with this question, and most recently, I think the best way to put it is gorillas. They're this band where they just have so many different genres that they compose with. And, but at the same time, someone can put on a song from two different albums and you can be like, oh yeah, this is gorillas. And so I feel like that's what I'm going with Biko. So it's not really a genre that I fall into as much as it is, I when I write a song, like, I'll have like a feeling in mind that I'm trying to do. Are you familiar with Types, Tim Krause?
Oh yeah.
Tim's
so good.
Yes. War EP. I want to plug that real quick. Super good. If you haven't listened to it, he's a local artist, and, I want to say his vocal style reminds me of Vampire Weekend. Not that they have like the same tone, but they can do incredible vocal gymnastics. Like, he can just do a vocal run like crazy. And his music, I want to liken to Ben Folds, very, very accomplished pianist. But I bring him up because I am doing a collaboration with him right now. We have a couple songs that we're sending back and forth. And the one that I've made the most progress on, I'm composing the music for, and he sent me an a cappella. And so it's just been interesting because I've had to kind of compose this sound around something that he gave me, which was a finished product. And that's been really fun. And he's a great singer, so I'm liking how it's turning out, but it's dark. And I had my roommate listen to it, and she said that it made her feel like a cold yet humid day. So just kind of like breaking out in a cold sweat. And I think there's a lot of desperation in the lyrics that he's using for it. So it's an interesting juxtaposition, and I'm excited to release it.
I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah.
It's not set in stone yet, but I believe he'll be providing the music for season 4.
Whoa.
Of the Grand Cast.
We got to get him doing some improv or something, so you can get him on as an interviewer. Unless you're trying to like branch out.
There's been some diversification.
Okay.
I've had quite a few stand-up comics on the past season, over the past 12 episodes or so. And
did you get Nolan before or after he won Best Comic?
After.
After?
Yep.
Damn. Got some accolades then. Well, that's really cool that I'm sitting in the same chair that these other creative individuals have also been sitting in. It's a nice feeling.
Can you feel it?
A little bit.
Absorbing in?
Yes. Someone had a very warm butt. I think there's still some heat coming off of it. Who was last week?
Last week, I didn't record one.
You didn't record last one last week. Well, then it's got to be like a really warm butt.
Got messed up.
Gotcha. Well, when it's released, y'all can look back and see who was the one before me.
Sarah Jean Anderson was the most recent episode.
I've not met her.
Oh.
So, interesting talking point when I do.
She's going to be very near you.
To my new place?
Yeah.
Okay.
For an event. She does all kinds of art, but she's selling paintings and...
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, okay.
I forget what the name of the event is, but I think that's this Sunday.
I'll see what I can make happen.
I'll have to look it up.
Sarah, I'm going to do my best to meet you. So I hope that this is a good introduction.
You should see her perform. She does some amazing character work.
Nice.
She has one called Rita. That's she makes these large like drawings on some kind of like large paper tack board or something. And she goes through like a whole, it's just incredible.
Okay.
Yeah. Highly recommend if you have the opportunity.
I am going to stalk you on Facebook a little bit, writing your name down. And I'm going to pretend it's entirely organic when I do eventually meet you.
Yep. And she's in a band and she does a sketch, like draw sketching, not sketch comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor something.
Doctor Strange. Yeah, totally.
Doctor
Strange Love.
Doctor, you'd have to go on Facebook. I'm not great with names. Sarah Jean Anderson, incredible talent.
Okay.
For watching, do you prefer improv, stand-up, or sketch comedy?
If it's going to be something local, improv, I would say. I do. What I really like about improv is that when it's like stand-up, I feel like because the person had so much time to prepare and get their routine down that the crowd is almost against them. It's like they're rooting for them to fail, which I correct me if I'm wrong, anybody who's out there, but I do feel like the deck is stacked against a stand-up comic. With improv, because you realize it's all like in the moment, I feel like the crowd is a lot more forgiving. And they're more willing to have suspension of disbelief and be a part of the experience. So, yes, if I was going to be doing something like in the area, that's what I would want to do. As far as like what I want to watch online, if I'm not going to like an event, sketch comedy, 100%. I think when it's done well, it's one of the best comedic art forms. Just because there's so much you can do with it. Beyond just like a monologue where you're up there.
There was a really good sketch comedy show last night with Late Night GR.
Okay.
At Dog Story Theater.
Well, even then, I'm saying like that's like an onstage thing and you can't like have 100% control of your environment as opposed to when you're filming and you can do anything with that. And then the editing that's involved and yeah.
So you like the recorded, edited form of sketch comedy.
Yes. Like I'd say like Whitest Kids You Know is one of my most influential ones.
All available for free on YouTube.
Hey.
So good.
Auntie Donna is another one I'd like to shout out if nobody's listening to that. They're Australian. It's a trio. Very just like surreal comedy.
It's on the YouTubes.
It is on the YouTubes.
What was the name?
Auntie Donna.
D-O-N-N-A?
Correct.
That's what AD stands for. I was close.
Or like Arrested Development.
Oh. Season 5
is on its way, yeah.
I'm excited for that. Thank you.
I wonder how it's going to hold up.
Extremely well.
How do you feel about season 4?
Loved it.
Okay. That I feel that jury was split on that one. Like I feel like critically acclaimed season 1 through 3 and then 4 was just kind of like, take it or leave it. Personally, I think I'd have to go back and rewatch it. I haven't seen it since it came out. I haven't rewatched season 1 through 3 in maybe like 6 years at this point. But I was really into it when I first discovered it, which would have been 2008. So 2 years after it was off the air.
Are you comfortable
with yes.
silence?
Oh, yes. I do think silence is really important. If you're uncomfortable with it, that means that you're uncomfortable with the situation you're in and you feel like you need to be contributing to it, as opposed to silence being like you're there and you can enjoy it and you don't need more stimulus than is already existing. You can just be there. And I do notice that some people have trouble with that for whatever reason. Sometimes you just need to think. Are we doing a bit?
Huh?
Are we doing a bit? Or are we being silent? No. Well, I just feel like for a podcast, people are going to be like putting this on and wanting to hear things.
Other people's wants are not my concern.
Fair? Wow.
What are some of your all-time favorite comedic movies?
Wait, I want to go back. Other people's wants are not your concern. So I can appreciate that. It's like you're putting out into the world this, let's say this podcast. This is the thing that you're contributing. Mm-hmm. Among all, many other things, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't care what the people
I make have this to say for about me.
It. You make it for you. Okay. Yeah,
I drive a lot for work and I didn't have enough podcasts to listen to, so I need another couple hours a week of content.
Okay.
So
I think that's really profound and something that a lot of people do really care about is rather what other people think about what they are doing. And so
if you can
pandering, do you think it is pandering though? If you just want to create something that people will enjoy, or is it because it makes you feel good that other people are enjoying it?
That's a good question.
You can ponder that one.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of Marvel, and I feel like they're pretty pandery.
Okay.
So maybe that's part of why.
That's also, I feel like if you're making a major budget movie, like you have to have people like it. You know, that's return on investment. But just in your creative efforts that you're making in your everyday life, I feel like that's more, is it for them or is it for you?
For you, it's for you.
And maybe that's for the best. Instead of having this be like blow up and have it be the next big thing where you're doing a live tour, interviewing people, and trying to get like as big as a crowd that you can, it's more just like, this is something I enjoy doing and that's all I need. And I like what that says about you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, favorite comedic movie. If we're going to that, this one always pops out in my mind. I've only seen it once, but Crazy Stupid Love. Now, I'm not...
Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
No, it's Ryan Reynolds, Steve Carell, and Emma Stone.
Yes.
And so, Ryan Gosling, not Ryan Reynolds. My apologies.
Same difference.
Okay. The attractive kidding. Ryans and all.
Completely different. Ryan Reynolds is a hack.
But I just remember that movie, like I was watching it, and then there was this scene toward the end where my jaw just dropped and I couldn't stop laughing at the situation that was unfolding. And I just remember that was like profoundly effective, and I haven't really watched it since then. But if I had to go with just comedy straight up, ones that I've seen more than once, I think I like music mockumentaries. I really liked Walk Hard.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. So well done.
Very well done. I really enjoy the comedy in that.
And very underrated.
Very, well, I don't know about underrated. I feel like it gets mentioned enough, but also Pop Star, Never Stopping. Wait, Pop Star, Never Stop Stopping. See, not a fan of that one.
Nope.
That's fair. Lonely Island isn't for everyone. It's not really for me either, but I just kind of popped that one on. I just find it enjoyable. That one's more of like a popcorn, just like I don't have anything else going on tonight.
Yes.
Yes.
It's not a film of substance. Like,
well, comedies, I don't really think generally are things of substance, really.
It can be.
What would you say was a substantial comedy film?
Walk Hard.
Walk Hard. Okay, well, we're on the same page with that. I appreciate it.
Comedy films that make you feel as well as laugh. I think 40-Year-Old Virgin did a good job of that.
Okay. You're a big Apatow fan?
Usually. But some of it's, but that's, he collaborates a lot. Mm-hmm. So it feels like not a lot of the projects are his pure vision. He's just enabling other people's visions to happen. And I'm not always a fan of the people that he's collaborating with. So some of the films, none of them are bad. It's just some of them I don't feel any compulsion to go back and watch again.
What about This Is the End? That's another one that sticks out to me.
I haven't gone back and rewatched it. It was pretty...
It was super cameo heavy. I feel like self-referential in that regard.
Yeah, there's a lot of like gore and
that's not really your thing.
Adolescent humor. It's funny, like in the right situation, okay. In the right frame of mind, then it's enjoyable. But it's not something I try to immerse myself in.
Sure. I was gonna say, as far as comedy, television is really what I primarily enjoy the most.
The next question. What are some of your all-time favorite television shows?
Boom. Community, first and foremost. That's number one for me. Huge fan of Dan Harmon and everything he's worked on. Big fan of Rick and Morty as well. I mean, who isn't these days?
Pickle Rick!
Yeah, I've been... I'd say, like, I look at Community as, like, a show that changed the way I looked at sitcoms. Because before that, I was into like Scrubs or The Office, or, you know, just like things that would find their way to most people's homes, just because it's really not offensive and sometimes it makes you think and it's emotionally compelling as well. But something about Community, it was just like, let's take these tropes that exist and admit that we're doing them and own it and then go somewhere else completely with it. And it became this like wacky adventure where they're trying different styles of filming and animating. And I was just really appreciative of that. Really anything on Adult Swim that's like my type of humor. I like darker things. Super Jail, I thought it was really good.
Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Aqua Teen, that was a little bit before my time, before my taste in comedy started developing.
That's worth going back to.
Do you think it holds up?
Oh, I haven't watched it, so I'm not certain.
Okay.
But I believe so, based on my recollection.
I would also highly recommend Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law. Yeah.
What about Squidbillies?
I do not like Squidbillies. I don't like Squidbillies, and I don't like King of the Hill. Those are like
what?
Those were the two that would come on, and I would just like change the channel.
It might be worth going back to King of the Hill if they ever make it available online. I think there's a lot of levels to it. And Mike Judge is just a brilliant social commentary.
He's the creator?
Yeah.
Okay.
Also did Beavis and Butthead and Office Space and Idiocracy. Okay. And just a ton of...
I was going to say I recognize that name. I think it was just too low energy for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what streaming shows are you currently watching? That would be like Netflix, yeah. YouTube, Hulu, HBO, et cetera,
yeah.
Et cetera.
I just found streams of season 12 of It's Always Sunny. So I just went through and binged that. That's a pretty popular show. A lot of people are talking about it, especially with The Nightman Cometh going on.
Ooh, that was so good.
It was.
You go see it?
Yeah. I sat next to you and Seth at the second performance.
Oh, I wasn't. You were sitting.
I was sitting down. You were standing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Me and Seth sat down.
Yep. Because you snuck in towards the end there.
Yep. Yeah.
I remember now. I was drinking alcohol.
Alcohol.
It impairs my memory formation abilities.
So do you remember how you felt about the show?
Oh, I loved every second of it. Yeah. I was so engrossed in the show. I wasn't paying attention to the audience.
But yeah, so that's something that I just binged. There's this show called Creature Comforts. You ever hear of that?
Nope. What's that about?
It's an older show. I want to say at least like 12 years old, maybe more. And it's just claymation animals that the entire audio of it is people talking. Like it's like interviews that they have with people, and they'll ask them specific questions, and then they go back and they have dubbed animals describing their answers. And it's a fun like combination. I do recommend that. Not something that's like groundbreaking by any means, but just like fun. As far as dramas, I'm not really into any right now. I watched 4 episodes of Ozark. Didn't really hook me. Black Mirror is the only thing I'm excited about to see more episodes of. Recently tried getting into The Twilight Zone. I've watched maybe 6 episodes of that. But yeah, just like dramas in general, that seems to be the big thing right now. Like Game of Thrones and... yeah, it's just too much for me.
What is comedy to you?
What is comedy to me? Comedy, I think is hyper subjective. A lot of people get offended by things that I would not. And that makes me kind of have to like take a step back and be like, well, try to put yourself in other people's shoes. And I feel like sometimes audience people, and I'm not saying audience members at events and shows, but more audience members in the world, if you are the main character in your story, a lot of people lack the ability to put themselves in other people's shoes, and so they do get offended. So comedy to me is making light of the tragedy of the human condition, and that's something that's uncomfortable for some people.
I'm trying to find the quote from the Rick and Morty episode, Interdimensional Cable 2.
Oh, about how we all, when he's giving the nihilistic speech to his sister?
Yeah, to Summer.
We all die, nothing matters, why don't we just sit down and watch TV? I'm paraphrasing.
No.
But I guess my answer just revolved a lot around of offensive things, and I don't think that comedy necessarily has to be offensive. I really like it when it's dumb and stupid and you just laugh at how ridiculous something is. So that's what I mean by it's so subjective and broad. Like, I don't think it's something that can be defined so easily. So I guess the answer then to me is what I said about making light of things that aren't always.
I can't find the quote. Oh, something about how Summer found something offensive, and then he's like, maybe, oh, this might be it. Oh, nope, that wasn't it. Dang it.
He's trying.
Yeah. I know where in the episode it occurred, but I can't think of enough of the text to be able to Google up the actual quote itself.
Well, I mean, I think people get the gist of it. Can you paraphrase?
Not well.
Not well.
I wouldn't do it justice. Well, watch Rick and Morty.
Season 1, episode 7.
No, it was the sequel they did.
I don't remember the second one. That episode I remember being not one I loved. I'd say like if I had to rank them, that'd be in the bottom 3.
Wow.
Yeah.
Season 2, episode 8.
Okay.
Interdimensional Cable 2, Tempting Fate.
Yeah, the first one, just there was so many quotable things in that, and just like comedy that caught immediately. Ants in My Eyes Johnson, Two Brothers, yes. Ball Fondlers. I just don't really remember the second one. Other than the whole... I mean, that was the episode where they were trying to harvest Jerry's dick and put it into...
Whoa, language, please.
Oh. Okay, I apologize. I swore before this.
His penis.
His genitals.
Penis.
Penis. Penis. And put
all of it too.
The whole kit and caboodle.
The shaft and the tip.
I feel like we're getting off the rails a little bit here.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to find a quote. And what were we talking about?
Comedy. What comedy is to me?
Moving on. Let's talk
about...
That was
ridiculous. That was comedic. That's why I laughed. It evoked an emotional response from me in the form of my diaphragm contracting.
I'll find that quote later.
Okay.
We can talk about it off air. Let's talk about... The Drunken Retort.
Ooh. This is a snapping. There was a point last December, right when I started doing Fictional Friends, that I had recently gone through a breakup and I didn't feel like I had any friends left in Grand Rapids because she got all of them and they were primarily her friends. I had moved here from Chicago a year before and we started dating almost immediately. But it was the first big snowfall, which I think was like December 9th or something. And I was just sitting in my room and I had some chores to do. And I said, when it stops snowing, then I'll get in my car and go do these chores and errands that I have to do. And so I sat in my room and it snowed and snowed and snowed all day until it was about 11 p.m. And I was just, something about it really stuck out to me. And I was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to have any days where I just like waste it. And so at the same time, that was when Cameron invited me to do improv. Afterwards, we went to Tyler Jenner Noah's house, Havana. And there I met Lauren Hutner, I believe is how to pronounce it. And she told me about The Drunken Retort. And I've been writing short pieces and poetry since late high school, early college. And I was just like, now that I'm on this track of not wanting to waste anything and wanting to meet new people and just push myself out of my comfort zone, I was just like, I got to try this thing. And so I went to Stella's the following Monday, and a couple of friends were there to support me, Fresca and Bree, fellow Fictional Friends. And I just read a really sad poem. And it was one that was super effective to me. And I got a really positive reaction from the audience. And that was super empowering. And so for a while, Monday was my night to be dramatic and feel that range of emotion. And Wednesday was my night to wear that other mask and be comedic. And it was a really positive flow for me. I felt like I was able to publicly handle a lot by doing that. And I've kind of fallen off from the retort. Not that I have anything against it, but I don't know. I think I just need some time away from it to really appreciate what it was doing for me again. I'm still writing, but I want some really good pieces to go back to it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Let's talk about working at Electric Forests.
Mm. I was the Ferris wheel ticket salesman along with my friends Aaron Denon and Brooke Berry and Victor Morales. And we did that for 2 weeks and we got to see a bunch of people just all whacked out for 6 hours a day. So the last shift of that was you'd be showing up at like 8 and working until 2 in the morning when the festival ended. And I have never seen so many people on drugs in my entire life. And something that I thought was really interesting was, for the most part, they were calm. They were just having a good time, even though their pupils were larger than their foreheads. And it was a very, very fun experience to not be part of the fun that everyone was partaking in, but to be a facilitator of it. So a lot of people really enjoyed that Ferris wheel. It lit up and everything. Went super fast. Maybe the fastest Ferris wheel I've ever seen.
Hmm.
Yeah. And it was right at the dubstep stage, so I got like 6 hours of wub 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 pumped into my brain every day. But the upside to that was the other 18 hours I had free to do whatever I wanted. So I could go see some artists, I could explore the forest, which I feel was the best part of that festival. If you're on the fence about going to Electric Forest in the future, I recommend doing it, even if there isn't like an artist that you're super stoked about, because you will find something, and the experience of being there is worth the ticket price.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Let's talk about producing music.
Okay. Is there anything specific you want to know? Because this is, for anyone interested, I went to Columbia College in Chicago and majored in audio design and production. And then I worked in studios and at live sound venues after that. And it's something that I'm very passionate about. So I could go on about sound for a while.
It is 2:47.
It is 2:47. Right now. So that's what I mean by like specifically.
Whatever you feel most compelled to talk about.
This
is more for like you producing your own personal music than the act of music production.
I started with Cubase, moved on to GarageBand when I got a Mac, which was kind of like a springboard to learning Logic and Ableton. And I'm good with Pro Tools as well, but Ableton is kind of the one I've fallen into as my program. I just feel like the sampling in it is top notch, super easy to arrange. That view window is great, very intuitive. So as far as production, that's my preferred canvas, if you will. One of my favorite feelings in the world is finishing a song, as I'm sure like any painter would be like taking a step back and looking at it and being like, it's done. You can keep adding to it. You can keep tweaking it, but at a certain point you just have to be like, it's done. And once that feeling of I've created something washes over you, that's just incredible. So I think that's kind of the feeling that I chase in my everyday life, and when I feel successful and when I feel like I'm contributing to humanity is when I finish a piece and I can release it to people. I will say that my stuff isn't the most easily digestible for the most part. And so that it's not for everyone, even though I would like it to be, but I understand that it's a different thing to me than it is to everyone else. You know, it's my baby, you know? And so I do like to get weird. I was classically trained as a pianist, and so that's my like compositional background, was learning how to do theory and read music from that. And then when I got my first recording program, that's when I realized I could be stacking layers. And so I don't need like five people playing at the same time if I can just do all these different things and put it together. And that was really the springboard that took me to where I'm at now. And so when I started, it made me be like just straight up drum track and piano and maybe a bass. And now it's like the one I'm working on with Tim. I think there's at least 40 layers like that I'm toying with in there. And so it's an exercise in subtlety because you can't have everything stick out. So you have to decide what's important, which I guess is kind of like a metaphor for life. You can't be everything. So choose what you want to be. But still incorporate all these different things that you want to be a part of you. Mm-hmm. I could go on, but for our sake and for you as the listener, I will spare you that because it will turn into a ramble.
And you provided the music for this season of the Grand Cast.
I did. I think it is really interesting that you chose the pieces that you did. Because you chose a track from an album that I put out in 2013 to be the opener. That's Bad Habits. And I would say that is one of my more accessible pieces. So I do like that. And then otherwise for the closing music, you chose Would You from my first album, which was out in 2010. And that's one that not a lot of people I think would like go to, because that one starts off with like a kind of like crazy trancy jungle beat and then goes into a pop song, and you chose the jungle beat portion to be the closer.
That's the whole song.
Oh, it is? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. When I was talking to you, you said it was the jungly part at the beginning, but I guess I didn't realize that.
Yep. It's the whole thing.
Okay.
My favorite part is the like the boing sound, like bouncing off a ball. That just gets me every time.
That was a sample that's literally called cartoon timpani. Those are the big drums. And so I think that sound is made by just like hitting this big drum and then taking a pedal and kind of pushing down. And so that was the sample I used. And I guess that's kind of what I mean by using like weird stuff. Mm-hmm. Like that's something that felt right to me, but that's super awesome that here you are telling me that's the part you really like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just that sound, because it fits in with the like the overall structure of the song, but it's kind of unexpected, but and familiar too, because it's like, you know, that sound from cartoons when someone mm-hmm. bounces off whatever. Like, boing.
I'm super interested in Foley work too. I think that would be a great gig. Foley work is when it's the people behind the scenes that record sound effects. So it's mm-hmm. just like if a director came to you and was like, hey, we need the sound of someone chewing for the shot. Well, it's like maybe just would not be the most pleasing on the ears. And so they'll come up with something that could mimic that, or footsteps, or just like we need to have somebody getting shot in a back alley. And it's like, how do you do that? And so just it's all about sound creation. That would be like my dream job, I think.
Hmm. Would you want to do that for like a live show?
I'd be interested in that, absolutely. Hmm. Are you got some wheels spinning?
I always have wheels spinning.
Okay. Well, keep me in mind.
Who are some of your role models?
Role models. So like for that question, it's like who do I kind of like view as someone who shaped me?
It's up to you.
Up to me again. Okay, here I'm just looking for some direction, but okay, I'll see where this stream of consciousness takes me. My parents, they're both very different. My dad is someone who knows exactly what he wants in this world, and he's achieved it for the most part. And I'm kind of envious of that. It's like there's not too much strife when you know what you want and you have it. It's like you've made it. And then it's like my mom is another big part of me, because she's goofy and she's somewhat eccentric and very high energy. And it's just like her mind can be here and then there and then here and back. And I feel like I've adopted some of that. So I definitely think they helped make me who I am. Other than that, as far as role models, I have musicians that I look up to. I think that speaks more to my creative work than it does to who I am. I think who I am is more an amalgamation of, and I'm sure people know this, but it's just like the people that I've spent the most amount of time with, that I've let the furthest into my heart and my soul, and like let them make a home there. And I've kind of adopted a lot of mannerisms and outlooks from that. And I don't know, I talk to myself a lot. I'm a verbal thinker. I sometimes don't know what I feel about something until I say it out loud. And so I feel like a great deal of introspection, but I almost don't want to call it that, because it's more like I'm just listening to the thoughts as they're coming up more consciously. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. What are some of your favorite restaurants in Grand Rapids, and what do you like to order there?
Hey, I do work at Iron and at Noco, and I do recommend both of them. Iron's a bit more pricey, so if you're having like a special night out, definitely recommend that. Noco's got a really good burger. Highly recommend that. As far as my personal favorites outside of that, I'm going to go with, oh man, Sammy Zero. I get it a lot. It's super tasty every time. Mm-hmm. Big fan of that. Electric Hero is another restaurant. I know they're a chain. I think it's only here in Grand Haven, though. There might be some more, but super good sandwiches. Almost the same price as Jimmy John's, just a little bit more. But much higher quality. I'm trying to think of like my favorite pizza place. Maybe Toppers? I've only had their pizza like twice, but I'm a fan of that. I know that's not like a, again, that's not like a Grand Rapids restaurant. But other than that, I could name like Stella's or Luna's or a ton of downtown places. Yeah.
What is your favorite thing about performing comedy?
How it makes me feel to make other people feel something.
What is your favorite thing about watching comedy?
Laughing, knowing that there's so many different approaches to a situation and watching it unfold and just being, I think a big part of comedy is subversion of expectation. And I know that's a term that comes up like quite a bit and what people shoot for sometimes. But it's always so refreshing to, for me to see a setup and be like, okay, it's going to go this way. And then it just takes a hard left. And that to me, if it makes my jaw drop, I'm just like, this is, that was genius. That was awesome. So the way that other people can make me feel.
And the final question of the interview portion of the show, if you could tell your 16-year-old self one thing, what would that be?
Figure yourself out. That's the most important thing. Don't just listen to what other people have to say about what you should do. It should, anything you do should be because you feel strongly that you should do it and not because someone else's expectation of you would dictate that you would do something. I would tell that 16-year-old that you don't have to follow a trajectory. Life isn't a path that you're supposed to walk down with defined parameters of success. It's just the biological experience of being alive, and you get to shape that into whatever it is. And so you can be hungry, you can be not someone that has a ton of money, and that doesn't mean you're going to be unhappy. That doesn't mean you failed. It just means that you should be finding something else that fills you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I haven't had time yet to set up a musical transition into the break. So if you wouldn't mind doing some sort of performance, whatever you feel like doing, and then ring this bell here to let me know that you're done.
Okay. Savannah, Nicki Minaj. I don't remember how it goes after that. And a little like...